Chudasunnata Sutta, the lesser discourse on emptiness. I have heard that on one occasion, the Blessed One was staying at Savatthi in the Eastern Monastery, the palace of Migara's mother. Then in the evening, Venerable Ananda, coming out of seclusion, went to the Blessed One, and on arrival, having bowed down to him, said to one side, as he was sitting there, he said to the Blessed One, on one occasion, when the Blessed One was staying among the Sakyans in a Sakyan town named Nagaraka, there face to face with the Blessed One, I heard this, face to face I learned this. I now remain fully in dwelling of emptiness. Did I hear that correctly? Learn it correctly, attend to it correctly, remember it correctly? The Buddha said, yes, Ananda, you heard that correctly, learned it correctly, attended to it correctly, remembered it correctly. Now, as well as before, I remain fully in a dwelling of emptiness. Just as this place of Migara's mother is empty of elephants, cattle and mares, empty of gold and silver, empty of assemblies of women and men, and there is only this non-emptiness, the singleness based on the community of monks. Even so, Ananda, a monk not attending to the perception of village, not attending to the perception of human being, attend to the singleness based on the perception of forest. His mind takes pleasure, finds satisfaction, settles and indulges in his perception of forest. So that is, that person is a monk is going to a sort of arms round or something to a village, and then he hears the noise of the these dogs and all those human beings, elephants, all those noises. And then come back to the arama, or the forest. So then he contemplate and sort of see that that in the village I heard these noises and elephant sounds and all those things, but over here it is empty of those things, and it's only this because there are monks. So it is not empty because of the monks. So what he sees is whatever thing it is present, so from that one it is not empty. Whatever thing it is not present at that moment, so it is the emptiness because of those things. So the elephants are not here, no sound, so therefore it is empty out of those, but not empty because of the order of the monks. This emptiness has to be understood, the meaning of the void. This is the empty, sometimes translated as emptiness, sometimes translated as voidness. The meaning of this voidness is the unsullied, that is the free from dirt, you know, clean, is one meaning. The other meaning is non-constraint meaning, and that means no threat, non-threat. And non-torment is another meaning. Non-torment. So if you go to the village, you can hear these noises, loud noises, elephants and making noises. There's no threat, no torment over here. And stand still is another meaning. That is the cessation of activity. Whatever the activities has ceased. So there is this the emptiness or the voidness because of that. He comprehends that whatever disturbances that would exist based on the perception of village are not present. Whatever disturbances that would exist based on the perception of human beings are not present. There is only this degree of disturbance, the singleness based on the perception of forest, arama. He comprehends that this mode of perception is empty of the perception of village. This mode of perception is empty of the perception of human being. There is only this non-emptiness, the singleness based on the perception of forest. Thus he regard it is as empty of whatever is not there. Whatever remains he comprehend as present. There is this and so this. His entry into emptiness according with the actuality is undistorted in meaning and view. So the next one is the perception of earth. Further Ananda, the monk not attending to the position of human being, not attending to the perception of forest, attends to the singleness based on the perception of earth. His mind takes pleasure, finds satisfaction, settles and indulges in its perception of earth. That is the element of extension, that the perception of earth, that completely, that he takes to mind, and normally that this patavi is developed in a way that they make a sort of a round circle in front of them, about 2.5 length away from this one, and then look at it and take the sign of the earth to the mind, and they close their eyes, still they get this perception about that round clay thing, and then they can maintain that sign, that the that circle, and then they let them expand with the closed eyes. They expand that one. Then some people expand to the size of the village, or you know, maybe the whole earth. So make it grow. So that is the patavi. And Buddha said, just as bull's hide is stretched free from wrinkles with 100 stakes, even so without attending to all the ridges and hollows, the ravines, the tracks of stumps and thorns, the craggy irregularities of this earth, he attained the singleness based on the perception of earth. His mind takes pleasure, finds satisfaction, settles and indulges in his perception of earth. So over here, that if you take a bull's hide and if you drag it in 100 direction, then there won't be any wrinkles or anything like that rabana thing, you know, it's completely wrinkles. Like that, this in this earth, there are these gullies, valleys and all those things. So without having maintaining that in the mind that these are, there are gullies and the valleys in the earth, that one may maintain it as completely as only the perception that it is the earth, patavi, element of extension, nothing else. He comprehends that whatever disturbances that would exist based on the perception of human beings are not present. Whatever disturbances that would exist based on the perception of forest are not present. There is only this degree of disturbance, the singleness based on the perception of earth. He comprehends that this mode of perception is empty of the perception of human being. This mode of perception is empty of the perception of forest. There is only this non-emptiness, the singleness based on the perception of earth. Thus he regards it as empty of whatever is not there. Whatever remains, he comprehends as present. There is this, and so this, his entry into the emptiness accord with the actuality, is undistorted in meaning and pure. So so that now he is not attending to the sounds in the village, anything like that, and he is not attending to the forest or the arani or the building over there, but he regards everything as the element of extension or the patavi. And before we go further, we will this part has to be expanded a little bit, because one wouldn't understand this wideness to a greater extent. And Patisambhida monk has got this chapter called On Wideness. And thus I heard at one time the Blessed One was living at Savatthi in Jethaskur, Anathapindika's path. Then the Venerable Ananda went to the Blessed One, and after paying homage to him, he sat down at one side. When he had done so, he asked the Blessed One, "Venerable Sir, the world is void." "The world is void," he said. "In what way is the world void?" "Because it is void of self or of what belongs to self. Therefore, the world is void," he said, Ananda. "And what is that is void of self or of what belongs to self?" "I is void of self of what belongs to self. Ear is visible object are void of self, or what belongs to self. Eye consciousness is void of self, or of what belongs to self. The eye contact is void of self, or what belongs to self. And the feeling that arises born of eye contact, whether pleasant or painful, neither painful nor pleasant, is void of self, or what belongs to self. Similarly, ear, nose, tongue, body, and the mind, mind consciousness, all are void of self and what belongs to self. So, here we are talking about the voidness in terms of what we, eye, ear, nose, tongue, body, the elements. And the self is something that we made up. We see certain thing, and then we have this, let's say we have used that particular thing, we have eaten some kind of food or something. And next time when we see that particular food on the table somewhere, and then we get these feelings generated by our mind, the volitional formation construct, that this is such is the feeling about this food, such is perception, and so on. As this is constructed, that we perceive that feeling. So we know that the feeling is sort of pleasurable. So pleasure, displeasure, or neither pleasurable nor non-pleasurable. Or regarding a pleasurable feeling, we sort of see it as pleasure, but it is actually, actuality is different. It is actually the displeasure or the suffering nature. So having perceived that pleasure, we regard that one as mine. This pleasure is mine. We make it up in our mind. So we get the perception that there is one problem, the perception that it is mine. The pleasure is mine. When we get the pleasure is mine, then we get the thought that I am. That same pleasure with that corrupted perception, we know about this thing, that object we are eating or consuming, and we sort of have a thought that I am. So the perception that this is mine, and the perception that I am, the thought that I am. And then I also get the view that I am. So there are three things happening over here. There is this perception of self, and the thought that I am, and there is this view I am. So three things are happening. So that particular thing, those three things, then I am talking as a self. And having got that one, then I would say that particular material thing is self. That feeling I got is self. The perception is self. The consciousness is self. And the volitional formations are self. Everything is now become self. Because I have done this one many times in many, many, many different ways. So we get this idea of self. And then, well, I am living with this my leg for that many years and sort of thing. Then I regard this particular object as mine. Now we use this temple premises over here in the Dhamma discussions. And then since we are actually using this one, then we also sort of think, well, this place is mine. You know, this is the place I am coming, that it is my temple. And so now whatever the things that we do, we make it up on ourselves that this is mine and so on. We are not going to say that the church in front of us, well, it is mine, because we are not going there, you know, sort of thing. But this one is mine. So we make it up, the perception, my temple, my thing. And this body has been with me for a long time, so this is mine. So one would regard that it is as self. And what was there as just a feeling that I constructed, the perception that I constructed, but I would say that one is a self. One would have constructed as a self. And what belong to self? What belong to self is that actually those three things, that the perception and the thought and the will. Those are the three things. So they are the things that are pertaining to self, because those are the three things that made up the self. The perception, thought and the will that I made up in my mind. So what Buddha said, the I is void of self. This I, although it has been with me for a long, long time, it is void of self and void of what belongs to self. It's void of those perceptions, void of those feelings, void of those thoughts, void of those the views that I construct. It's void of all those things. Similarly, I, ear, nose, tongue, body and the mind. And there are various kind of voidness, that voidness as voidness, voidness as formations, voidness in change, the supreme voidness, voidness by characteristics. This one is alone, is really lengthy. What is voidness as voidness? I is void of self, or of what belongs to self, or what is permanent, or everlasting, eternal, or not subject to change. I is void of self, or what belongs to self, as we discussed a little while ago, or what is permanent. I is void of what is permanent. The permanent I, you know, that I have a view that my I is permanent, so I made it up, so it is void of that. Everlasting, it is not everlasting. Eternal, or not subject to change, I is changing. But we regard that one as not changing. Similarly, nose and that one. So that is the voidness as voidness. There is another one called voidness of formations. There are three kinds of formations. The formations of merits, punyabhi, sankara. The formations of demerit, apunyabhi, sankara. Or the formations of imperturbability, aninjabhi, sankara. So that's the formations of merit is that when you do meritorious deeds and we attain the jhana concentration, so that's the good one, formations of merit. Formations of demerit is when we actually do bad things like killing, stealing, all those things, then there are formations of demerit. And the formations of imperturbability is that when we attain arupa jhana, the concentrations, the four arupa jhana concentrations. So now they are void as well in this way. The formations of merit is void of formations of demerit. When I do meritorious deeds, I'm not doing the demeritorious ones. So I am void of those demeritorious ones. So what is present is the meritorious formations. Like that, the forest and the patavi or the village. Formations of demerit and the formations of imperturbability. Formations of demerit is void of the formations of merit and the formations of imperturbability. Both are void of each other. So it is again a bit lengthy, more discussions on that one. And then there is the last one is the what is supreme voidness. The idea is supreme. This is the idea is best. This idea is excellent. That is to say, the stilling of all formations, the relinquishing of all substrata of being, the exhaustion, destruction of craving, the fading away of greed, cessation, nibbana. That is this Girimananda Sutra, if you remember. This is this Virada Sanya and Nirodha Sanya in that one. Etam Santam, Etam Panitam. Remember that one? So the cessation of all the cravings. So that is the supreme voidness. That is the voidness of all the cravings. Cessation. And again, I'm jumping here and there. There's a voidness by suppression. Voidness by suppression is that the seal for sensual desire is suppressed and is void through renunciation. If we have the renunciation, if we have the sensual desire, then, and if you compare with the thought of renunciation, so you can see the seal for sensual desire is suppressed and is void through renunciation. If I have the renunciation, the sensual desire is suppressed because I want to get rid of the sensual desire. I have this renunciation. And the void of cutting off through renunciation, seal for sensual desire, is both cut off and void through none with ill will. So again, we cut off the ill will. Through the voidness as escape, through renunciation, seal for sensual desire, is both escape from and is void. So if we have renunciation, the sensual desire, we escape from the sensual desire at that time because we are not with the sensual desire. And there is this internal voidness. Internally, the I is void of self or of what belong to self. That was the first discussion we had. And what is permanent or everlasting or external or non-subject to change. What is external voidness? Externally visible objects are void of self or what belongs to self. Or of what is permanent or everlasting, eternal or not subject to change. So we get the idea about the voidness now in a greater detail. So it's again a bit of a chapter over there.
Really, to understand our things, if we think about in a simple way, is that right? If we say like, so for example, my body is merely a construction, and it is subject to change, and because of that, I cannot claim it is as mine. Is that
it is right? Yes, it is right. That is means that because of that, I am actually saying voidness has changed here. Because the impermanent nature is actually changing nature, they are in that impermanent nature thing. It arises, passes away. So we are saying that my body has the impermanent nature. That means the body is void of the permanent self that I am constructing myself. It's just that as soon as someone understands it is a construction as a construction, so then the idea about the self is sort of gone. And from that one can see. But this examples over here, it is going a long way to arrive at that particular thing that you are talking about. It is that I have this body, then I got these material things, and then I disregard this whole thing in the material world as the element of extension of patavi, and then I disregard that element of extension outside, like grasses and all those things, they are not mine. And similarly, this element of extension over here is not mine. So I disregard this thing for the whole world, entire system, universe, or whatever. And then the element of cohesion, you can get rid of in the same way, liquid elements. So having got rid of that one, then you don't have any perception above the body itself. So mind become pure. That's what Buddha is saying. At that particular time, the mind become really pure. And that pureness is maintained, and then he would see that the space is infinite. And then he would go to the consciousness is infinite level, where he would feel the feeling. And then he go beyond the feeling level. So you can see each state, we get rid of something. We see that this is void of these things, because that other thing is not troubling you much. The material thing, the body that troubles us quite a lot, is no longer troubling, and is not tormenting or anything. That is empty at that time, because I'm not paying attention to this thing. So by this way, I'm getting rid of each the material thing, and then the feeling, and then the perception, and so on. So then at the end, you would see where is the self, that so-called self. When I disregard everything over here, where is the self? So one can clearly see at that time. And this voidness, real voidness, comes with the understanding about the Nibbana itself, the third noble truth. If someone understands the third noble truth to a great extent, with that understanding, then he gets the determination for wisdom. Prajnadhisthana. And when he get the determination for wisdom, then he would put effort. It become the iddhipada, the psychic power. And out of that one, he would reach the, he would sort of go in the seven factors of enlightenment. And having reached the seven factors of enlightenment, develop those seven factors of enlightenment, that leads to something called appreciative joy, or mudita apramana. And mudita apramana, the appreciative joy, is the path, the door to this emptiness. It is that big. Emptiness is a really big concept. It's hard to understand, but Buddha has made it very simple over here for someone to see how the emptiness should be seen. By going through this path, one can actually reach that point and see it. There's a big Dhamma behind this one, which is not explained over here. But if someone follows this one, then he would see that it is so. So, then we have this infinite tune of space. Further, Ananda, the monk, not attending to the perception of forest, not attending to the perception of earth, attends to the signless based on the perception of the dimension of the infinitude of space. His mind takes pleasure, finds satisfaction, settles and indulges in its perception of the dimension of infinitude of space. So the space is infinite because now he got rid of the material thing. You see that if I get rid of this material thing, if I made the whole world, the person who made this patavi, this previous meditation, he regards the whole thing in the world as patavi, nothing else. That is the element of extension, nothing else, not even the liquid element. For the whole world, he made it up as patavi, where far as it can grow, that is the patavi. So, having made it to that one, now he is actually going beyond that point. And so if you remove everything in the world, the materialistic things, what is left? It is only the space. If I take this chair out of here, at this point, there will be space. Like that, if I remove this building, there will be a space. What was here actually before the construction was the space. And then we construct these things and then we call it as a temple or whatever thing it is. We just made it up in our mind. So if you remove the material, whole material thing in the world, what is left is the space. So that's what the next one is. So he comprehends that whatever disturbances that would exist based on the perception of forest are not present. Whatever disturbances that would exist based on the perception of earth are not present. There is only this degree of disturbance, this singleness based on the perception of the dimension of the infinitude of space. He comprehends that this mode of perception is empty of the perception of forest. This mode of perception is empty of the perception of earth. There is only this non-emptiness, the singleness based on the perception of the dimension of the infinitude of space. Thus he regards it as empty of whatever is not there. Whatever remains he comprehends as present. There is this and so this. His entry into the emptiness accord with the actuality is undistorted in meaning and pure. Further, Ananda, the monk not attending to the perception of earth, not attending to the perception of the dimension of the infinitude of space, attend to the signless based on the perception of the dimension of infinitude of consciousness. His mind takes pleasure, finds satisfaction, settles and indulges in its perception of the dimension of the infinitude of consciousness. He comprehends that whatever disturbances that would exist based on the perception of earth are not present. Whatever disturbances that would exist based on the perception of the dimension of infinitude of space are not present. There is only this degree of disturbance, the signless singleness based on the perception of the dimension of the infinitude of consciousness. He comprehends that this mode of perception is empty of the perception of earth. This mode of perception is empty of the perception of the dimension of the infinitude of space. There is only this non-emptiness, this singleness based on the perception of the dimension of infinitude of consciousness. Thus he regards this as empty of whatever is not there. Whatever remains he comprehends as present. There is this and so this his entry into emptiness accord with the actuality is undistorted in meaning and pure.
So these are the jhana states?
These are the jhana states, yes. Now he actually reaching the sixth jhana state. So first he was just observing the emptiness, because that village, you know, these servants are sound there, but there is this Aranya, the forest. And then now he thinks, well, this forest or this building, for example, is made of this element of extension. And now I got the element of extension everywhere. So I grow the element of extension for the whole world. Having grown up to that one, that he reached the fourth dhyana concentration level, because that he can made it up to that level means that is the fourth dhyana concentration level. And in the fourth jhana concentration level, what he sees is that the space is infinite. If the mind is pure at that time, what he sees is the space is infinite. Infinite space is there. So it in at the infinite state, that you do not pay attention to earth at all, the material thing at all. The one that he made vast, very vast, and he can grow up to the Brahma world or up to that level, but still he is not paying attention to that one. This is something I explained earlier as well. It is something like that on earth, you see that earth as a big thing, right? House is a big thing and the others are big thing, right? But let's say that you are actually climbing a mountain, then there are two people going into the bottom of the mountain over here, and one is staying here, the other person going up the mountain. When that person go up the mountain, then he would see that there is this more and more, actually he reach far away, he would see this particular person as a tiny. You know, previously this person's features, nose, tongue, all those things, the body, the color, all those things were significant. And you go far away, you can see this person is no longer significant.
For example, if at the beginning of the process, I notice that when I sit to meditate, this person's leg hurts a lot and this person's back hurts a lot. Mm-hmm. But if I'm progressing meditation, then the focus is further away and this person is
no longer. Yeah, you can see that physically, you can see that when you go to the top of the mountain, the other people on the bottom of the mountains are tiny, not significant, there's nothing for me to pay attention to, right? Now suppose you are going further away, you are going to somewhere near star or something, and then you are looking at the earth. And how big is the earth when you go to a star? You can say it's the tiniest thing, you know, it's maybe a dot, you know, it's a dot type thing. So now for that person, this earth is not significant. And what about the houses over here on the earth? You know, they are not significant. They are tiny and, you know, there's no significant thing. And the human being, the living being, so they are no longer, you know, sort of significant. So therefore, that person is not paying attention to anything, the materialistic, material things. So he maintained that the space is infinite level in that mind. So when he maintains the space is infinite, you can see to have the space infinite, you are actually perceiving that one. So your consciousness should be there in that equanimity level, arose at the equanimity level, that this thing is infinite. For example, if I am perceiving this particular carpet is from extend from that one to that end, then at that time my mind also going through that carpet, you know, every bit of it, that this is such and such, so my perception. So if I say the space is infinite, then for the entire space that I can think that it is infinite, my mind goes with that thought. So then I can, after a long time, maintain that the consciousness is infinite without the aid of that. The space is infinite, like I don't need this carpet length and all those things to memorize that how much, you know, it is lengthy and so on. So my measurement now is the consciousness. Consciousness is infinite. So at that level, consciousness is infinite. He would actually see, what do you know from the consciousness? We know feel. From the consciousness, one would know, you know, that the significant thing is the feeling. So he knows that pleasure, displeasure, neither pleasurable nor non-pleasurable. Well, that's what we know from the consciousness. And if someone understands that this feeling, you know, come to arise depending on the contact, I wouldn't get any feeling if there is no contact. Then, as like that, you know, if you get a two sticks, fire sticks rubbed together, you get the heat. And then if you separate the two fire sticks, you can see the heat ceases. Like that, feeling ceases when there is no contact. If the eye is not contacting with the form, or ear is not contacting with sound, there is the cessation of contacts and the cessation of feeling. So he now get rid of the feeling as well. That's the next one. Further, Ananda, the monk, not attentive to the perception of dimension of infinitude of space, not attentive to the perception of dimension of infinitude of consciousness, attend to singleness based on the perception of dimension of nothingness. Because there were six elements before, that's the element of extension, element of heat, element of motion, element of cohesion, those are gone. And then space element, he is no longer paying attention to space, he no longer paying attention to consciousness because he is not caring about the feeling either. So if there were six elements, and if I got rid of six elements, what is left? There is nothing, no thing. So he is reaching the plane of nothing. So he comprehends that whatever disturbances that would exist based on the perception of the dimension of infinitude of space are not present. Whatever disturbances that would exist based on the perception of the dimension of infinitude of consciousness are not present. There is only this degree of disturbances, thus singleness based on the perception of the dimension of nothingness. He comprehends that this mode of perception is empty of the perception of the dimension of infinitude of space. This mode of perception is empty of the perception of the dimension of infinitude of consciousness. There is only this non-emptiness, the singleness based on the perception of the dimension of nothingness. Thus he regards it as empty of whatever is not there. Whatever remains he comprehends as present. This there is this, and so this is entry into emptiness accord with the actuality is undistorted in meaning and pure. So, but you can see there is this perception now. The perception, there is no thing. He got rid of the material part. He got rid of the space part. He got rid of the consciousness, that feeling part over there. But there is this perception, there is nothing, nothing, the emptiness. It one would be perceiving at that time, there is nothing. There is perception. So he doesn't want to have that perception either. So therefore he is going beyond that perception. And he will reach neither perception nor non-perception. Further, Ananda, the monk, not attending to the perception of the dimension of infinitude of consciousness, not attending to the perception of dimension of nothingness, attend to the singleness based on the dimension of neither perception nor non-perception. His mind takes pleasure, finds satisfaction, settles and indulges in the dimension of neither perception nor non-perception. He comprehends that whatever disturbances that would exist based on the perception of the dimension of infinitude of consciousness, and then this the space and all those things, now they are not present, but there is only this neither perception, non-perception level. So that he get into the actuality at that particular time. And then he reached the singleness as signless concentration. Further, Ananda, the monk, not attentive to the perception of the dimension of nothingness, not attentive to the perception of the dimension of neither perception nor non-perception, attend to the singleness based on the single signless concentration of awareness. His mind takes pleasure, finds satisfaction, settles and indulges in its signless concentration of awareness. So this signless concentration means that he actually reached the seventh concentration level. Having reached the seventh concentration level, he contemplates as impermanent. Whatever thing they are, he contemplates as impermanent. So this is the point. If you reach the seventh jhana concentration level, if you do three contemplations, you go into three vimukti, three liberations. One liberation is the signless. There is no sign as permanent. Anything is impermanent. If you contemplate as the suffering, then you go into the another liberation. And then if he contemplate as not self, at that seventh concentration level, he go to the voidness liberation. So those three liberations are achieved by that one. It's called Anumitta Vimoksha. He comprehends whatever disturbances that would exist based on the perception of the dimension of nothingness are not present. Whatever disturbances that would exist based on the perception of the dimension of neither perception nor non-perception are not present. And there is only this degree of disturbance that connected with the six sensory spheres. Depend on this very body with life as condition, he comprehends that this mode of perception is empty of the perception of dimension of nothingness. This mode of perception is empty of the perception of dimension of neither perception nor non-perception. There is only this non-emptiness that connected with the six sensory spheres, depending on the very body, life as condition. So having reached that level, the impermanence, went to the seventh dhyana concentration, and then contemplated about the impermanent nature, having contemplated about the impermanent nature, he would see that there is only this thing, that impermanent thing, but it is not empty because of this eye, ear, nose, tongue, body, and because this depends on the life, you know, if there is no life, there is no body that he would see. So he go into that level. Further, Ananda, the monk, not attained to the perception of dimension of nothingness, not attained to the perception of dimension of neither perception nor non-perception, attained to the signless based on the signless concentration of awareness, his mind takes pleasure, finds satisfaction, settles and indulges in its signless concentration of awareness. He comprehends that this signless concentration of awareness is fabricated and mentally fashioned. And he comprehends whatever is fabricated and mentally fashioned is impermanent or inconstant and subject to cessation. For him, thus knowing, thus seeing, the mind is released from the effluent of sensuality, effluent of becoming, effluent of ignorance. With release, there is the knowledge released. He comprehends that birth is ended, the holy life fulfilled, the task done, there is nothing further for this world. So there's this good word over here, you know, that this is the fabricated and mentally fashioned. Abhisankatam abhisanchetasika. That it is a construction from the mind. And whatever thing constructed, subject to cessation. So he maintained that the release, the impermanent nature, he maintained that one for a long time. There is nothing for him that he would regard as permanent. The materiality, the feeling, perception, volitional formation, consciousness, all impermanent. Thoroughly established in his mind. And now we understand this particular thing, that signless concentration itself. From the concentration you understand these things are impermanent. And this concentration itself is also constructed. Because by the time he was in the village, that he was hearing the sound and all those things, and this was not there. By the time of he contemplating that this element of extension or patavi, right, this concentration was not there. When he was concentrating about the spaces infinite, this signless concentration was not there. Eventually he got rid of all the things that lead to this concentration, and having reached that concentration, having seen that everything is impermanent, he would see this concentration itself is impermanent. See, the perceiving the same thing applying to the concentration as well. And by that time he released from everything. He comprehended that whatever disturbances that would exist based on the effluent of sensuality, effluent of becoming, the effluent of ignorance. That's kamasav, bhavasav, avijjasav. Are not present. So it's all gone. He understands. Having liberated, he understands all those things are gone. You see, the knowledge comes first, and then these things are gone. The effluent And there is only this degree of disturbance that connected with six sensory spheres. Depending on this very, very, very body with life as condition, he comprehends that this mode of perception is empty of affluent of sensuality or becoming and ignorance. And there is just this non-emptiness that connected with six sensory spheres. Depending on this very body with life as its condition, thus he regards it as empty of whatever is not there. Whatever remains, he comprehends as person. There is this, and so this, his entry into emptiness accord with actuality is undistorted, in meaning pure, superior and unsurpassed. Ananda, whatever contemplatives and priests who in the past entered and remained in an emptiness that was pure, superior and unsurpassed, they all entered and remained in this very same emptiness that is pure, superior and unsurpassed. Whatever contemplatives and priests who in the future will enter and remain in an emptiness that will be pure, superior and unsurpassed, they all will enter and remain in this very same emptiness that is pure, superior and unsurpassed. Whatever contemplatives and priests who at present enter and remain in an emptiness that is pure, superior and unsurpassed, they all enter and remain in this very same emptiness that is pure, superior and unsurpassed. Therefore, Ananda, you should train yourself. We will enter and remain in the emptiness that is pure, superior and unsurpassed. That is what the Blessed One said, the gratified Venerable Ananda, delighted in Venerable One's word. So it's a great discourse, starting from, you know, that the village and sort of thing, and reaching that very high level until the release. This particular path, this emptiness path, is the path opposed to the third path in this nutriments. You know, there are three paths, the edible food as the nutriment, and then there is this contact as the nutriment, and the third one is the volition as the nutriment. So the perception is the one that creates in that path. And opposed to that one, there is this satipatthana, meditation that we do, and then the third satipatthana, the third foundation of mindfulness, about the thought, and that leads to third jhana concentration, and in the third jhana concentration, and one would go in this the sequence, there are 10 dhamma parts in it, and the bodhyanga is the seven factors of enlightenment is one part of it. And having reached this, the mudita appamana or the appreciative joy level, one would reach this one. So they are all connected to the same, those four, the nutriment. If you understand the third nutriment properly, and if you thoroughly trying to not go through that third nutriment path, then you end up over here. It's the same. And one would have to understand the first one to understand the second one. One has to understand the first one, second, to understand the third one. So they all link to each other that way. It's better over there to describe that one that way. It is that if you take the mudita appamana or the appreciative joy, for example, it is depending on this the nibbana. So nibbana is the cessation of all the cravings, right? So if you look at the mudita or the appreciative joy, how do you appreciate the things? That if it is not troubling you, then you won't actually appreciate it. So if I start with the loving kindness, for example, let's say there is someone coming, a poor man, hasn't got a shirt or something, right? So he is coming, and then you would probably have a loving kindness, it would be good this particular man got a shirt. He is shivering the cold and all those things, and you might have a loving kindness in your mind, right? But still you may not have given anything to that man. If you have compassion, then you probably give you a shirt, maybe the one you are wearing. Oh, what you have, you give it to that man out of compassion. So you can see compassion is in the second path, it is more than the loving kindness. Next time that you would see that man actually coming with that shirt, wearing that shirt, then you have the appreciative joy that you have done the compassion and he is happy and you are happy because of he is happy. So you are appreciating that one. And at that time you see that you wouldn't have the lust for your shirt that you have given now. Shirt has been given up to you. If you ever get the lust for that shirt, then you don't have the appreciative joy. Because then you can't appreciate that thing. So, with the appreciative joy, you can see there was that something that ceased. What ceased is the lust for that shirt. What appreciated is that somebody is using it and sort of that condition. Like that in the Nibbana, all the cravings are ceased. And you would appreciate that, the cessation of the craving. So with the cessation of the craving, then there is this appreciation. I had this lust before, this sort of lust and so on, that I had the lust for the villages. For example, if you go to a village and if you fond of that hearing sounds, hearing men, women dancing and the elephants and all those things, you know, sort of thing, that person can't stay in the forest, can he? Because he appreciates all the time what the sounds in the village and so on. If you appreciate the crowd, that means you want to be in the crowd. You can't be in the forest. So if you go into the forest, then you actually like the forest in that way. That means you are actually appreciating not having that company over there. You appreciate the emptiness of those very same thing you first have. Like that shirt sort of thing, you got rid of it. And then about the body, you got rid of that the body part, you know, the material thing, whatever thing it is. Now you no longer appreciate having this body either, because you managed to get rid of it and you don't have any perceptions. And then the space. We like the space quite a lot. We think that we don't like the space, but if you think that I don't mind the space, so I don't care about the space, and think about your office. Would you like anyone to put a box, you know, boxes in your office or things in your room? What they are taking up is the space. So we are clinging to the space as well. Now in the next one, that he is not even clinging to the space. He has given up that one and he appreciates not having the space either. And then the consciousness. And in that feeling, he got rid of the feeling as well. And going beyond the feeling, he reached the perception, plane of nothing. So he perceived there is nothing. Now he got rid of that one, the perception that there is no thing is really good. The space is infinite is really good. If you attain that one, you see how beautiful it is, how pleasant it is. Because there is no any bodily things in that level. But this person is now happy to give up that one as well. And having given up that one, he attained to the signless concentration as well. Having attained that one, the signless concentration, he getting rid of that one as well, as it is also constructed. So finally he got rid of all the cankers, the desires. Desires for the sensuality, desires for becoming, or desires for non-becoming. All of those are given up. So there, as you can see, this appreciative joy in that one. I had this one, you know, this person was using these things for many eons, infinitely. Now he has given up those things. And he appreciates the giving up of that one. So that's how the appreciative joy or the mudita apramana works. And that is this door to this emptiness. So you can go from simple example to this one. This good discourse is really good if you understand at least the first few parts. You can do it. You can think in the meditation time.
That is, you can kind of understand how many things you are feeling.
Yes, first you see that people don't like to live in the forest. You know, don't like to live, stay alone. They want other people, the company. It's a big thing. People want to live with others, the society. Or when people are afraid not to live in the society. So because of that one, they do so many things, you know, the community work, all those things as well, because of that one. And so if someone is going to the forest, that means he got sort of a guts, you know, the courage to get rid of this thing and be alone. And yeah, one has to understand, so do I have the courage to get rid of these things, material things?
What if it's more emphasizing about perception, for better or worse, we have to go through the perception, and that is the key to liberate or get.
Exactly.
Yeah. The other question I have, that you are talking about the person who is coming up the hill, and gradually he goes up, he sees the timeness of the things he previously grabbed or she previously taking him as very much appreciated.
Taking hold of his mind.
And with he's climbing up me, he's climbing up the jhana level.
Yes.
Yeah,
yes, it is.
That means when you go to the jhana, you can see the worldly things we are doing is nothing.
Uselessness of that one. Yeah. Yeah, so the going to the star means that you have gone to the space is infinite level, right? Yeah, fourth, fifth jhana level. So that's the mountain. That's the mountain. When one would climb that one, one would see. Otherwise they wouldn't see that much, the concentrations. Yeah.
The first one, like what you say about this one, the perception thing, it is the first thing. Better or worse, because you explain how we can use perception for better or and we climb up to the 8th and better.
Yeah.
And also, we are struggling here with the perception in the world in and so all the things based on our activity, perception regarding the world things.
Yeah.
And this is what we use the same perception to the get rid of.
Yeah, it is this perception that it's the cutting point. If you develop the perception, correct perception, what we have developed so far is the wrong perception. We perceive things as fair, while it is foul. We perceive things as pleasure, while it is displeasure, suffering. We perceive this pleasurable thing as mine. We are thinking that it is pleasurable and we perceive as mine. What is actually there is the displeasure. It's a dart. The dart of suffering is coming and wedging into my body and holding my mind. But I am perceiving as it is mine. Because I do not know exactly that this is not pleasurable. I know it as pleasurable because I have used to perceive it as pleasurable. So once you understand, this is not pleasurable, it is suffering. I have been suffering for this cause, because of this one I have been suffering many eons. I am still suffering from the same thing. If someone understands, then he can cut down that perception that this is not mine. I don't want to grab this one as mine. How that self is born, that Buddha says, one regard for myself. That regarding is a formation. So then this chetana volition comes in. If you cut down the perception, I got the feeling. I have the feeling, I know that feeling. I feel the pain or the pleasure or whatever thing it is. But I know how to distinguish between these two. That this feeling, whatever feeling I have, whether it is pleasurable, or whether it is pleasure, or neither pleasurable or non-pleasurable, they all included in suffering. If you understand that all of them are included in suffering, why would I regard this feeling as mine? As soon as you understand this feeling is not mine, it is suffering, then it is not mine. If you understand it as impermanent, then it is not mine. Because if I know something, some sort of a thing that I value is a gem, for example. If I know there is a bomb with the gem and it's going to blow out, I'm not going to grab that gem. Like that. If I know the impermanent nature, I don't regard that one as mine. If I know that this one is suffering, then I don't regard it as mine. So this same perception can be used, as you observe, for the better things. Let me have this better perception. Let me get rid of this village thing. go into this jhana concentration where I can maintain this patavi or element of extension to the infinite level, or the space to the infinite level. If I do that one, then so I am using my mind, so better things. Now, at each state, we get rid of something. Like we go to grade 1 school, and then we go to the grade 2. So I am no longer in grade 1. And go grade 3, I go get rid of the grade 2. Like that, each state, get rid of that one. Until it's really refined and very low level, and I don't have to deal with this worldly matters anymore. My mind is pure, and then I can get rid of the desires. I use this discourse quite a lot at a certain state of my mind. Whenever I read that discourse, I stay with that one for about 1 week in the meditation time. And otherwise you don't understand these discourses. You'd don't use the whole discourse. You would use the part that you understand. You would see that the village part, for example, you would see. So, use that one to that extent.
But then you have to understand this course. This discourse, you have to have very, very big knowledge. Because, for example, village is actually the worldly world. Right?
Mm.
And so, we have to understand there is particular to those. But if you just hear it, if you hear something like that, you won't get anything.
Yeah, but if you understand that when you actually sit down, left or sitting somewhere in your room, I don't have those troubles that when I was visiting my relatives, you know, I don't have any sounds because of their noises and so on. And you can see this is really quiet, this is really good. And then you actually appreciate that particular time, this quietness compared to the other one. But if you have so much desire for those noises and things like that, then you can't appreciate it. So you have to learn to give up something to appreciate. Like that shirt example.
When you have a description of the jhana states, can we really understand if we haven't achieved the jhana state?
Well, you can sort of understand certain things, even though you don't actually achieve the fifth jhana level. The space is infinite, but you can understand that example where if I reach that mountain, that whatever things in the ground is insignificant for me. You understand that concept. If you understand that concept from your mind, then you sort of have a glimpse what is this fifth jhana is. Whether you have the ability to reach and maintain it is a different thing. For a moment you understand this one, there is this, that moment, at that moment you have this understanding about the fifth jhana. It is not a big thing. You can, if you really go through the meditation, Dhatu Vibhanga Sutta is a really good one, if you want to reach in that way, you can understand. For a second, for a millisecond, for example, you would reach that one. This is what it is, but you won't be able to maintain it. So if you can maintain it, then you can get the knowledges sort of thing. It's possible to understand. You know, we don't sort of go into, for example, an engineer, for example, right? So someone, let's say I'm not an engineer, and I see other students studying engineering. And then they graduate as engineer, or they do this one, and they, you see that what they do, they construct these buildings, you know, that the bridges and sort of thing. And you would think, oh, I also can construct. Your bridge might fall, but you also can construct, isn't it? They are using these wood pieces and concrete and all those things, and you can also get the understanding, right? Likewise, you have this bit of understanding. But when you actually reach that high level, then you get the real feel about it. Because then you like that one, you don't like the other one you already got. So the difference is that although you understand, you have not given up, or you have not appreciated the space is infinite, although you have not, since you have not reached it. So there is understanding. I mean, everything is coming within the scope of the mind. Although you say that I have not reached this fifth jhana, sixth jhana, for example, You have reached many times in your past birth. Many, many times. Right? You have lived over there. So many times. It's just how to get into that one that I have was there before is the question. You have been there. So you know, but you can't remember now how to do it, how to arrive at it. It's only that thing. So it can become, it can, you can make it happen by thinking.
Can you concentrate on maintenance during meditation time, thinking about
what you just described also lead to emptiness. That meditation you are talking about,
yes,
is also leading to the emptiness. Why? Because that you are actually disregarding whatever in this body, because it is impermanent, then it is not mine. Whenever you actually say that it is not mine, so that particular part, your mind is empty of that body. You are not regarding anything as self in that time, regarding the body. You may be regarding the feeling, that is the remainder, but the body is gone. So you can say that I am empty. The self is empty of the body, but self is not empty because of the feeling. So that is also emptiness. It is not apart from the emptiness. So all those meditations lead to emptiness. Emptiness is a really nice thing to achieve. And if you do the Eightfold Path meditation, I'll tell you, you reach that level very quickly without you knowing. You even do not know that I have reached seventh concentration level, but you are there. Because if it is suffering, if I know the cause of suffering as the craving, if I know if the craving ceases, the whole problem ceases, right? Then I give up the craving in my mind at the meditation time, very quickly. If I know the birth is suffering, aging is suffering, sickness is suffering, death is suffering and so on, it's all suffering. Nothing else I can see. So I can see this one is originating from the craving. Then I disregard everything in the world at that time to the meditation. After the meditation is a different story. By the time of the meditation, you are behaving differently. That's the only thing it is important. Behave very well in the time of meditation. If you do that one, you reach that level. You don't have to have any aspiration, let me be in the seventh jhana concentration or let me be in the voidness or anything. You are just eliminating everything that leads to suffering. Simply you are going there. That's the powerfulness of this Four Noble Truth, contemplation about the Four Noble Truth. Okay, we'll stop for today then.